Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, September 5th. I'm Lisa Music, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, man in critical condition after being buried in sand avalanche near Samoa yesterday. FireSafe Council sends free work crew to aid elderly Laytonville neighborhood in fuel reduction efforts. And PG&E future rate increases will be 3% or less. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Emergency personnel were dispatched to a medical rescue call near New Navy Base Road and Samoa around 1:49 p.m. yesterday afternoon. A 911 caller told emergency dispatch that a woman was in need of medical assistance after a sand avalanche had, quote, swallowed her husband and trapped the woman. Resources from Samoa Peninsula Fire, Humboldt Bay Fire, and CAL FIRE were dispatched to the scene, along with deputies from the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office.
This is Meg Ruiz. I am the Public Information Officer with the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. Yesterday, on September 4th, an incident occurred in the Samoa area at the beach. A gentleman and his wife were at the beach and unfortunately dug about a 6-foot hole through a sand dune and ended up collapsing. The wife was able to get out and call for some help.
The woman's husband, however, was buried in the sand for several minutes before help arrived, the HCSO spokesperson stated. Though initial scanner information indicated concern that the man had perished in the accident, first responders administered life-saving medical aid.
After 911 was called, the sheriff's deputies showed up and was able to administer CPR. He ended up getting transferred over to St. Joe's, and last we heard, he's in critical condition.
The incident that occurred at the Samoa Power Pole Beach highlights the dangers of digging deep holes in the sand.
Be very careful with sand at the beach. It's shifty. It's unpredictable. We really don't know what direction it can fall. So especially in these dunes, just being very carefully treading on top of them or on the sides of them.
A 2007 study by the New England Journal of Medicine found that from 1990 to 2007, there were 52 reported cases of sand holes collapsing on victims, ranging from 3 to 21 years old. Around 60% of those cases resulted in a fatality, with many of the survivors requiring resuscitation. In fact, a Science Alert article says research suggests more people die from sand burial suffocation than from shark attacks. During a town hall event on wildfire safety work, a representative of PG&E promised that future annual rate increases will be no more than the standard inflation rate of 3%. Daniel Mintz reports.
The cost of residential power from the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, PG&E, shot up by an average of 18% at the start of this year, but the company is pledging to limit future increases. This year's PG&E price hike covers the costs of the company's grid enhancement work, as well as wildfire safety upgrades, which address fire risks from factors like proximity of vegetation to lines and poles. The safety work was detailed during a September 3rd PG&E online town hall meeting. One of the most effective and expensive actions is undergrounding power lines. PG&E Regional Vice President Jake Ziegelman said the company aims to underground 10,000 miles of power lines in high-risk fire areas. During a question and answer session, he said undergrounding costs only account for about 0.5% of an average bill. And he said future increases will match the annual inflation average.
Overall, our plans for the next couple years are built around stabilizing our rates. And so we know that energy prices, energy bills are top of mind for folks right now. We know that there's a lot of anxiety about rising energy prices, and that's on top of all of the other day-to-day costs that seem to be rising and going up, right? Rents, home mortgages, insurance costs, groceries, all of those things, and it all adds up. So our plan for the next 2 years really is built around stabilizing our rates so that we keep our rate increases at 3% or below. So right around that level of inflation or even lower. So our budgets, our work plans, all of our cost reduction measures, all of that is going to be built around keeping our rates and our bills at that 3% per year or lower.
Overhead lines are being made safer through vegetation removal and tree trimming. PG&E's work in southern Humboldt was controversial last year, as property owners said they weren't notified of work done on their properties. Ziegelman described the work and advance notification, he said, as part of the protocol.
We all love trees, but trees are also a big source of wildfire risk. So every year, we inspect vegetation on about 100,000 miles of overhead power lines, with some locations patrolled multiple times a year. We trim or cut down more than 1 million trees that present a hazard, and we do even more tree safety work where we've had a lot of outages caused by vegetation in any particular area. This work reduces wildfire risk, improves reliability, and makes our electric system stronger. If any safety work is planned on your specific property, you can expect an advance notification from us by phone, text, email, or an in-person visit. And for more information on our vegetation management work, you can visit us at pge.com/trees.
Dave Meyer, PG&E's customer outreach director, said 10-foot radius of vegetation clearing is being done around power poles in high-risk wildfire areas. He said the work's been done on 70,000 poles so far, and more will be done as fire risks have been acute this summer.
This year, we've recognized that there's been a shift in wildfire risk in California, right? We saw the heat waves that started in July, a significant number of red flag warnings across the state through July and August, and that California was really trending toward one of the worst wildfire seasons that we've seen recently. And so as we're reviewing the data, we recognize that risk. We expanded our pole clearing effort right around the end of July to include an additional 50,000 poles in those high fire risk areas that aren't part of that state compliance requirement. So this is above and beyond what we're required to do and what we do annually. So we started that work in late July, clearing that 10-foot radius around these additional 50,000 poles. As of Saturday, we were at about 37,000 of those 50,000 that had been cleared. So making good progress. We'd expect that to be done in the next few weeks here. And then we'll reassess that strategy, reassess the risk we're seeing, and if that mitigation or that pole clearing work is an effort we need to continue expanding through the remainder of wildfire season here in 2024.
The town hall also included information on public safety power shutoffs, a meter installation program for use of backup generators, and power loss community resource centers. The forum will soon be posted to PG&E's website. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Humboldt County has a suicide rate that is more than twice the California state average. In honor of Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month, the Southern Humboldt Family Resource Center and SoHum Health are hosting a holding space event this Friday.
September is Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month, and so we are holding a community gathering called Holding Space, and it's for suicide prevention and awareness. We are going to offer resources and information from different service providers in the county and locally in our area. Our goal for this event is just to bring light and support and really share love with folks in our community who have experienced losses of a loved one or a family member, a friend, a colleague, a schoolmate to suicide. And in our community, just like in other communities and around the world, you know, suicide is growing in numbers and percentages. I wouldn't call it an epidemic at this point, but I do think that mental health and depression is pretty high in this area. So this event is really just to offer support, resources, and let people know that they're not alone.
That was Amy Taronas, coordinator for the Family Resource Center in Redway, who is hoping that bringing this topic out of the shadows with this free event will enable community-wide discussions and healing.
We know that there's a stigma around suicide, But I think that there's opportunity to reduce that stigma or even lift that stigma. And in our small community, there is nobody that I'm aware of that doesn't know somebody or had an experience of suicidal ideation or attempt. And so I think it's just really important that we recognize how common it is to have a suicidal ideation or to have a time in your life where you're feeling really down and out or depressed or despair. And so I think that what prolongs the suffering of that is that we can't talk about it. There's so much shame and there's so much guilt around it, you know. And that's kind of the same when we talk about substance use. Or if we, you know, talk about somebody who may have overdosed. And so there's this idea that it's somebody's fault or it's a characteristic of their personality or something, you know, a default, if you will. And I think that the more we can reduce the shame and the guilt and recognize that being a human is really hard. And sometimes we have, you know, really hard experiences and prolonged experiences or compounded experiences that make it really difficult for us to, you know, just shake off and just, you know, well, put on that, you know, smile and just keep on keeping on. And so I think if we can share that, you know, we've all had experiences or times in our life that have been really hard. There's a saying with youth counseling, which shareable is bearable, you know, and I think in this situation too, it really is just that, to recognize that we all have some really hard times and together we can get through those hard times. Suicide is a permanent action to a usually non-permanent experience. And with that being said, I recognize too that sometimes finding the right words or the right time and the right moment to talk about it is really difficult. Even if you have good intent and you really do care and you want to show your support, sometimes that language that we just don't have. And so an event like this, I think, is powerful in so many ways. Just showing up to the event, you know, sharing it on your social media, saying, I'll be there. Or, you know, if there's a picture that somebody else shares and they see that, you know, maybe their neighbor, their coach, their teacher, their cousin's there. There's unconscious kind of language happening there. And it's like, if I see somebody showing up to an event like this, it lets me know that if I have times of trouble or need, that person might be a safe person for me to go to. So there's this unspoken presence or power of presence at an event like this.
Many find themselves unable to discuss suicide, the stigma around it silencing those that suffer and those that are grieving.
I think sometimes there's this idea that, like, somebody who is grieving or wounded, you know, it's like, oh, put a Band-Aid on it, you know, but the person needs stitches, you know, like, and it's one of those things where I think we minimize what we need. We minimize how bad it hurts. I think that's just something we do in society all the time, regardless if it's a, you know, bruised knee or a twisted ankle, you know, we just want to minimize it. We don't want to put anybody else in any type of way which they have to endure our pain either. And I think that this event is a place where people can show up and say, in a way, I'm here to take on other people's pain. I'm here to be willing to share in the grief. You know, I'm not scared of some tears, mine or yours, you know, and I think that it's a safe place to do that. And if we can create a safe place, then in this community setting, I think it also will give people tools to be able to create a safe place within their home or within their own smaller community or friendship group.
Southern Humboldt has been marked by the devastating loss of community members to suicide. In line with national averages, men are three times more likely to commit suicide than women, leading Taronis to issue an invitation to the area's male population.
I want to personally invite the men in our community, because if we think about who and how our community members are passing and who are really suffering, we really understand that our men are suffering. And when we look at our numbers and we look at the long list of people in our community we've lost, oftentimes, and as we know, the highest percentages are men, and I would even say our boys. And so I think that if we can have strong men role model the ways to grieve and to hold space for others, I feel like we can break that generational cycle within our male community members. And I do think that it's going to take strong, healthy men to show up to events like this, to show our boys that it's okay and that they're welcome.
Taronis shared that the event and discussion that surrounds it can open up meaningful conversation.
The other thing that I've been aware of is when I share the flyer, if I talk about it in the community, more often than not, the person I'm talking to will tell me of a situation that they've experienced or the loss of a loved one that they've experienced. And so what I'm noticing is, one, the idea around suicide is so much more prevalent than we understand or perceive it to be. And then also the power is just being able to talk about it, you know, asking a friend, hey, I saw that this event is happening. Do you want to come with me? And so, you know, the power that support or invitation can have is really meaningful, too.
The event on Friday, September 6th, will feature music, food, and community support. Attendees are encouraged to bring a photo or item to place on the community altar to remember the ones lost. And there will be an opportunity to share a poem or other meaningful statement. Mental health resources will be on site. The event will take place at the Garberville Town Square from 5 to 7 p.m. with a butterfly release at the end. For more information, call 923-1147 or email frc@shcd.org. Turning to Mendocino, the Fire Safe Council has dispatched a work crew to a remote neighborhood in Laytonville, past Spyrock Road, to assist with critical fuel reduction in shared areas like roads. This service, provided free of charge, comes as a much-needed boost for the community. Sarah Reith brings you the details.
The Mendocino County Fire Safe Council is rolling out a new program supporting community work days to make shared spaces more fire resilient. The FireSafe Council's professional fuel reduction crew will join volunteers and help out with a variety of neighborhood projects. On August 23rd, a crew of five hooked up the wood chipper, gassed up their chainsaws, and headed to Laytonville. The Blue Rock Road Association, which maintains 16 miles of road just off Spyrock, wanted to keep their thoroughfare clear in case of an emergency. It's a small, isolated community not far from Spyrock Elementary School, which is now shuttered due to a lack of students. Brent Olson, the treasurer and secretary of the Road Association, says that with an aging population, COVID, and the change of economics in the backcountry, it's been more and more difficult to round up the fees and the labor to maintain the thoroughfare he and his neighbors rely on. It's typical of many communities in rural Mendocino County.
We have about 76 parcels of private ownership back here with about, I would say, 40 to 50 people who live back here in total. And so this is a key lifeline for us to come in and out.
The volunteer side of the work party consisted of 9 community members, not counting the very friendly dog that showed up just in time for lunch. One of the stalwarts was Don, a longtime resident who came to Laytonville as a back-to-the-lander 52 years ago. He's no stranger to how much work it is to keep wildfire from his doorstep.
So what have you been doing to make sure that you don't burn up?
Well, a lot of brush removal, tree removal, lemon, burning in the winter time, and just trying to keep up with the growth of the woods, and doing it in a healthy way where taking out the dead and leaving alive. And I know it's just part of living here like this.
Communication and laying the groundwork for firefighters are also key.
Always keep water on hand. I've got a 3,000 gallon tender, water tender truck, and I've had to use that once, and back pumps and Pulaski's and McLeod's, and we usually got them beaten down enough to hold them till the pros get here. We used to have a pretty tight community back in the day, and a lot of younger people, and everybody was on CB radio, so we used to be able to respond real quick. A little different these days, getting a little older, so still work with saw just about every day.
In addition to providing access to firefighters and an escape route, a well-cleared road can act as a fuel break, helping to contain wildfire and reduce its intensity. The FireSafe Council can provide labor, equipment, and assistance with permits and landowner agreements to reduce fire hazards along the roads. The work is one of the projects funded by the FireSafe Council's share of revenue from Measure P, a voter-approved 10-year quarter-cent sales tax. Most of the money is allocated to the county's 20 fire departments, but 10% of the funds go to the FireSafe Council for fire prevention, resilience, and readiness efforts. Crew lead Gabriel Villa reminded everyone that the work is not supposed to interfere with birds' nests or vegetation that provides shade and stability to waterways. and fire as a natural element is not the enemy.
If we were going to prevent fires, we're going to cut every tree down and lay cement everywhere. Everything's going to be brick and steel and cement, and everything's going to look like a prison cell. So we're not here to clean cut or clear cut. You know, we're not here to wipe this out. We're not logging. We're here to just reduce the amount of fuel. We've worked with a lot of foresters. So we actually work with preserving this beautiful area as well as just reducing the fuel.
The Fire Safe Council also makes liberal use of its chipper. Chris Combs, the new president of the Blue Rock Road Association, said he could think of at least one good use for the chips.
We have something of a small orchard behind our cabin up here that it would be nice to have some ready-to-hand mulching material that we can put around them to help maintain the moisture in the soil. So we might be dipping into the pile a little bit here and there. It's nice to have it on the way in.
Large piles of decomposing wood chips can heat up and cause a fire, so chips should be spread out immediately. Not all the material gets reduced to mulch, though. The Blue Rock Road Association wanted to make sure its road banks continued to be stabilized with some vegetation, and the crew was there to make sure they got what they wanted. At Olson's request, crew member Devette Hayes showed precision work with her chainsaw as she liberated a young maple tree from a stand of coyote brush that was creeping towards the road. Olson didn't hesitate to recommend the work party program.
We've been trying to get work like this done, but, you know, just with volunteers, without the proper tools and things, it's nearly impossible, and it takes 10 times longer. So to have you guys come out and to supervise and to do all the work with us volunteering makes it go so much smoother, and plus we know it's being done professionally and that you guys know what you're doing and what to cut and what not to cut and so forth.
Got pros like Devette on the scene.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Devette's great. While we're talking, she's working, so we better get back to work.
The next workday will be with the Pine Mountain Fire Safe Council on September 20th. If you'd like to apply for help with a workday in your neighborhood, or if you just want more information about the program, contact Eva King by emailing king@firesafemendocino.org. I'm Sarah Reith.
In state news, San Francisco hotels were operating with limited services after a nationwide hotel worker strike. KPFA's Emily Burris reports.
Over 2,000 hotel workers in the Bay Area joined a scheduled 3-day strike over the weekend, calling for better wages, fair staffing and workloads, and the reversal of cuts made during the COVID pandemic. Workers represented by the union Unite Here walked off the job on Sunday at the Grand Hyatt SFO, Grand Hyatt Union Square, Hilton Union Square, the Palace Hotel, and the Westin St. Francis. Lori Reyes with the Unite Here Local 2 Union said workers at the Hilton and Union Square have been striking outside the hotel 24/7 on a rotating schedule since the strike began.
The whole 3-day strike is to send the message that our members are ready and they're willing to do what it takes to win a fair contract. It is a really big fight because we are so far apart in negotiations, but we're hoping that they get our message loud and clear. You know, we've been out here loud day and night.
Reyes said the hotels have not responded directly to the union workers striking, but they are blocking entrances. She said that at the Palace Hotel, they put up a barricade against the striking workers. Unite Here says a total of 15,000 workers have voted to authorize strikes, which could spread to other cities, including Oakland. The union says it hopes to replicate recent success it had in Southern California, where it won higher wages, increased employer contributions to pensions, and fair workload guarantees after repeated strikes. Reyes said that the national negotiations are scheduled for later this week. John Elrod has worked at the Hilton in Union Square for nearly 20 years. He also serves on the union's executive board and negotiating committee. While striking, Elrod says he's heard from hotel guests that the Hilton is operating under very limited services. He says he wants the hotels to know that the union workers on strike are very serious about their demands.
For me personally, maintaining affordable health care is my number one priority, and wage increases are very important to keep up with inflation and the cost of housing here in the Bay Area. And then workload conditions are really important as well.
Elrod said he's participated in many strikes over the years and is impressed by the amount of participation he's currently seeing. Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna of Santa Clara and Democratic Supervisor Aaron Peskin of San Francisco have both expressed support for the strikes via X. Supervisor Peskin, who is also running for mayor in San Francisco, said on X that he spent his Labor Day at the strike. Bill Fung is another Hilton worker on strike who's been at the Union Square Hotel for almost 30 years. Fung said the Hilton has had to bring in around 40 people from outside to compensate for the amount of workers that are striking. He says since the pandemic, the hotels have dismissed the needs of San Francisco workers.
They ignore that we are all working class people living in the high cost area. And we struggle every day with the paying rents, paying food, right? And all these things.
Fung said he would absolutely go on strike again if negotiations aren't reached. He says workers need to send a clear message to the hotel industry.
For our family, we never bet down again. For our future, we cannot bet down again.
The three-day strike will end at 10 p.m. tonight, after which the hotel workers will return to their jobs. This follows months of contract negotiations after the previous contract expired on August 14th. Hotel workers with Unite Here are also on strike in Boston, Honolulu, Kauai, and San Jose. Workers in Baltimore, San Diego, and Seattle ended their strikes last night. I'm Emily Burris, Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
In national news, Vice President Harris condemns gun violence following a high school shooting in Georgia. The U.S. Attorney General addresses Russia's latest attempts at election interference, and former President Trump finally admits he lost the 2020 election. For 2024 Talks, Alex Gonzalez brings you this report.
Welcome to 2024 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
It's just outrageous that every day in our country, in the United States of America, parents have to send their children to school worried about whether or not their child will come home alive.
Vice President Kamala Harris went off script at a rally in New Hampshire Wednesday to condemn gun violence. A shooting at a high school in Winter, Georgia, left two students and two teachers dead. Georgia Republican Congressman Mike Collins represents Winter. He's now facing criticism for a two-year-old video where he fires an assault rifle and pledges to support former President Donald Trump.
Georgians are sick and tired of weak-kneed, spineless politicians who won't fight for Trump, get to the bottom of 2020, and fix our election. Well, if they won't do it, Mike Collins will.
The White House is renewing calls for an assault weapons ban and universal background checks. Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says it's not normal for children to live in fear of school shootings. Meanwhile, the former president has, for the first time, admitted that he actually lost the last election. On a Russian-American computer scientist podcast, Trump described the vote totals as much closer than they actually were.
I was told if I got 63 million, which is what I got the first time, you would win. You can't not win. And I got millions of more votes than that and lost by a whisker.
Former Wyoming Congresswoman and outspoken Trump critic Liz Cheney says she's going to vote for Harris.
Because of the danger that Donald Trump poses, not only am I not voting for Donald Trump, but I will be voting for Kamala Harris.
A new ABC Ipsos poll shows a strong majority of Americans are prepared to accept the election results, regardless of who wins. That includes more than 9 out of 10 Harris supporters and more than 3/4 of those backing Trump. The Department of Justice is accusing two employees of the Russian state media company RT of funneling millions through a Tennessee company to push videos on social media platforms. At a Wednesday meeting of the Election Threats Task Force, Attorney General Merrick Garland gave more details on Russia's latest attempts to interfere with U.S. elections.
The Justice Department is seizing 32 internet domains that the Russian government and the Russian-sponsored actors have used to engage in a covert campaign to interfere and influence the outcome of our country's elections.
Garland says the Kremlin still wants Trump to win and hopes to weaken support for Ukraine. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is doubling down on his ceasefire negotiation demand that Israel keep control of the Philadelphia Corridor, a strip of land between Gaza and Egypt. Netanyahu is being blamed for failing to reach a deal in time to bring home 6 hostages before they were killed by Hamas. In contrast with his hardline stance, Netanyahu asked the families of the dead for forgiveness.
I don't stand in judgment of these tormented souls because they're undergoing an agony that is hard to fathom.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our reporters, Emily Burris, Daniel Mintz, Sarah Reith, and Alex Gonzalez. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.